Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, broadcasting live from Paddy's Bar inside Tropicana Field. Big game for the Rays. They need to get on track right now. Guys, start at the first pitch. Speak about it. I wish Doug was on here. John Daly did throw a strike to throw out the first pitch out there. So, like the walk of our legends, Mr. Roger Hanner up in Atlanta, shouldn't be Philadelphia, and Mr. Don Henderson down in Jersey Shore, having a good time down the shore. Gentlemen, welcome. How's everybody doing tonight?
Well, the one legend.
Everybody's doing great.
Playing golf.
This John Daly had a great first pitch down here, I tell you. But I got to tell you a funny David Price story last night, right? You know, David and I, we love our dogs, Bugsy Capone, he loves Astro. So on a note I said, dear Astro, Bugsy Capone, how do you like your new home? Bark, 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 bark. Good luck for your master and his new team. Bark, bark, bark. Love Bugsy Capone. David Price looked at I start cracking up and gave me a big hug for that. He's pitching tomorrow, guys.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Does he know which dugout he's supposed to be in this time?
Well, I was in the clubhouse last night after the game. He says, Tommy, David, how you been? He comes up and gives me a hug. You should see the media, because David and I always talk before and after the game about Bugsy Capone and Astro and the dog lovers and that. And after a victory, what do you always feed Astro with steak? So hopefully you won't be Astro steak tomorrow night, so hopefully tomorrow afternoon won't pitch that way. So I'm just hoping the Rays can get on track, guys. It's just a tough thing to do. Grant Belfort said it last night He said it comes off, blames everything on me. So the Rays are 11.5 behind the Baltimore Orioles. Don Buck Showalter has done a great job. 20 games over 500.
Absolutely. Is Don there?
No, Don's still playing golf. He had a
on the court.
the tournament.
No, you're right, Tommy. He has done a great job. There's no doubt about it. And I get to watch a lot of their games with that MLB package. But go ahead.
Oh, he's done a great job. And the guy's done an even better job is, I got to say, JoJo already, because what his Yankees did to the Rays two out of three games with a patched up team up there and that. And you know, my pet peeve for Rays fans down here in Tampa, Roger, you know, when Jake McGee threw the ball first base to Derek Jeter to check his runner, all the Yankee fans started booing, and it outraged the Rays fans right now. It's kind of pitiful and bad for our fans are not showing up. They're over at One Buck Place watching them useless exhibition games over there. You know, this team's still in a pennant race, and you got to support the team. Looks like a sparse crowd tonight, maybe 10,000 if you're lucky tonight, guys.
That's sad. You know, I was going back and forth from both games the other night, and you know, I just want to make a note. I know you guys probably read or heard about this today, but sidelight, Robinson Cano showed his appreciation last night for everything that Larry Bowa did for him in developing him into the player he is today. When he was with the Yankees and Larry was with the Yankees, so when Joe Torre's there. And he left a beautiful Rolex watch for him last night at Larry's locker.
I agree with you about that.
I thought that was a great gesture.
I agree with you about that, Roger. You know, these guys are getting older and older right now. It's just tough to see these guys the way they used to play baseball a long time ago, you know.
So many times, unfortunately, you know, we hear the bad things about athletes, but, you know, here was a guy, first opportunity really had to see Larry, and, you know, he goes out and buys him, you know, I mean, hey, listen, that's just a small pittance for the money he has, but I thought it was just the idea. I thought it's a shame more players don't take an attitude like that to show their appreciation.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's with Derek Jeter, that's the last time you might see Derek Jeter get an RBI. You know,
right.
Might get an RBI right now. It's only the last time I'm not, because Derek Jeter is such a class individual. I mean, he always says, Tommy, how you doing? You know, Derek, I'm doing fine. You know, it's just a class individual. We don't want to see, I hate to see Derek retire now, but if he retires, I mean, it's another class Yankees just been retired. Meredith Rivera, now Derek Jeter right now.
Yeah. It's an end of an era. That's all you can say.
Because you remember when Smitty retired from Philadelphia, Carlton went to Cleveland. That was the big two for the Phillies back in the 80s up there, Carlton and Schmidt up there. And Rose got on there a little bit later on.
That's
and
right.
Such a shame.
Well, you know, we talked about that, the guys that they brought back for the alumni weekend, you know, when they honored Charlie Manuel, putting him on the Wall of Fame at the Citizens Bank Park, and you know, I think the Phillies do a really nice job. I mean, I wish they did better on the field. They did win today 4-3, and then the broadcasters were getting around because poor Cole Hamels pitches great games, and he loses or he doesn't have any decision. And today he didn't pitch well, but the bullpen came through with four innings, shutout ball, and once again Kenny Giles strikes out. Side, I guess he did give up a double, but he shuts him down when he needs to. And 23 years old, great future for that young man.
Exactly, Roger. You got a great point about that, because you figure, you know, these guys are getting older, but not better right now. I mean, they're losing a lot of eye contact with the bat and ball right now, Roger. And that's really a tough thing for these guys to try to do and muster right now.
Well, it is, Tommy, and, you know, a couple of years ago, I remember that Brian McCann wasn't able to hit, and he went and had an eye exam and found out he needed glasses, and I'm just surprised that there isn't more emphasis. Maybe there is. I don't know, but to have eye exams on a regular basis. You know, we also have to send out congratulations to the Tanny Little League team from Philadelphia.
Yes, about that,
for their
huh?
success. And how about that young lady, Monet, throwing a fastball at 75 miles an hour?
Oh, my God. I think the Phillies hit her, Roger.
Roger, did you watch either one of those games on Saturday night?
I did. I watched one of them, yeah.
Those kids were really, I mean, every one of them were poised at the plate. There wasn't even with all the lights and all the hubbub around them. Now, she has had to have somebody drive her around the field in a golf cart because she can't walk from one place to another without people mobbing her.
Wasn't that amazing?
It's amazing.
They were talking about, I believe they play tonight, don't they? On TV.
Yeah, they do. They play Vegas tonight.
But
whoever wins tonight plays on Saturday.
Yeah, well, you know, you've coached for a long time. I've coached nowhere near as many games as you have in many sports. Mainly mine was basketball and football. I mean, and baseball. But I would say this. I don't remember many boys at that age throwing a 75-mile-an-hour fastball. And
right.
We've talked about this on the show many times with baseball people about ruining their arms with curveballs. But when you're throwing a 75-mile-an-hour fastball, you're going to strike these kids out, and that's what she's done.
Yep.
Exactly. Roger never gets that scene in the press box last night. It's Dalil Haggerty's back in town.
Uh-oh. The man has returned.
So he's going to be Brandon Raven down there. First pitch down the trap, he's sure with Jake Odorizzi. But tomorrow's matchup is going to be a classic matchup. Two friends of mine to be going against each other, David Price and also Alex Cobb for the Rays. And, you know, for David, you know, coming here to Trop, you know, I mean, they had it's a big hoop for a while, you know. But Rod, you know who I am, especially on the ballpark. You know who I am, Frank, you know. And I walked in that Tiger clubhouse, and I said to one of the media members, where's David at? He's been looking for you all day. I remember that's the time when, I was still working as one organization when I first got down there. Joe Carter was with the Toronto Blue Jays, and he called me the phone, when are you coming down? I want to see, we'll go to dinner one night. Okay, so after the game, we met for dinner up there and that, and then all the media members are saying, here he goes again. Well, that's me, Roger and Frank. You know that. I just can't help that up there. Now.
Well, you know what, Tommy? You know, I may have mentioned it one time. You know, several years ago, Dan Baker's daughter, Courtney, was working out in the Quad Cities on TV, and she was covering the story, and there was another young lady there from one of the other TV stations. So they got talking. It was Joe Carter's daughter and Dan Baker's daughter.
Oh, wow.
Just think of how, in the 1993 World Series, how many times Dan Baker announced, now batting, Joe Carter.
Well, Joe was at the Ice Palace doing a hockey game, and I looked up, I'm like, oh, my God, how many times a good friend of yours hits a game-winning home run?
Yeah, that's right.
And then we went down to spring training next year, and then this is a funny story because I was doing the magic driving to Orlando, and I said to Joe, You got a minute? You know, I said, Tommy, I've been here. You got a minute? No. I said, okay. You don't have a minute? Okay, well, I'll get you tomorrow. Well, he says, get your clothes, meet me in Dunedin at 1 o'clock. We got 1 o'clock tee off time, and tell your mom I'm coming over for dinner. So, okay, so he came over for dinner. Joe was, you know, Joe loved my dad and my mom tremendously. So Joe said, all right, now get your microphone. Your dad's going to interview me. So we're
Roger,
sitting there,
we
oh, my God, Joe's interviewing, my dad interviewing Joe, all these questions up there, and I used it for the baseball show a long time ago, and the guy said, who is that voice? That was your father. Well, he almost signed a deal with the St. Louis Browns back in the 40s in baseball.
In the heyday. Isn't that something?
Yeah, but
Roger,
Joe
we
and
have
other...
Mr. Darryl Ledbetter's on with us.
Oh,
hey,
Darryl,
hey.
Welcome to the program. Gentleman covers the Atlanta Falcons. Is Roger's seat buddy for the Falcons games. Darryl, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I'm broadcasting live from Tropicana Field tonight.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me. Just finishing up here at Flowery Branch with the Falcons today.
Hey, Darryl, always great to see you, my friend, and what a great job and what a great friend you are. And give us your prognostication, because I heard Jim Miller on Sirius NFL Radio this afternoon says he doesn't think the Falcons have much talent. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, they have a great deal of talent. Is it enough to win the Super Bowl? Perhaps not. But they have some very talented offensive players. I think it starts over there with the quarterback and both wide receivers and Terry Douglas. They are retooling that line. And, you know, Steven Jackson could have a flashback to how the running attack. Now, defensively, they have some fine young cornerbacks in Desmond Trufant and Robert Alford, and Stacey William Morris been to a Pro Bowl. So they're kind of remaking that front, but there's some talent on this roster. It's not devoid of talent.
You know, one of our favorite players in recent years, Thomas Dekeaux, was let go, and he's going to start for the Panthers. And I have a couple of questions for you. Number one, do you think that was a mistake? The second question is, it's a shame about Sam Baker being lost for the season second year in a row.
Yeah, Roger, and let me just thank you for the kind words at the beginning there. We'll keep going here. But, yeah, Thomas, it may be a mistake because, yeah, he had a bad season, but what are you going to replace him with? They tend to get mad and cut guys without having the replacement ready. They did that with Todd McClure. They did it with John Abraham. And they may be doing it again here with Thomas. So, you know, we'll see if that happens again. But he's a guy who was only a year removed from the Pro Bowl. So we'll see how that works out. Right now, Dwight Lowry is playing free safety, and they drafted a kid, Desmond Stoppard, who will have to be developed. And Sam, yeah, it's just a hard luck deal for Sam. But, you know, there again, they drafted a kid who had an injury history, and he's certainly been lived up to that in the NFL. He's had three knees, two back surgeries, and an elbow surgery. This would be his sixth surgery after having three or four surgeries at USC. So at some point, you got to wonder if Sam wants to keep on playing and keep going under the knife here.
Yeah, you sure do.
Gary, I got a question for you. What's the talk in Atlanta right now? Because all the times you had the talent to be going to Super Bowl in a couple of years there, this year being the Super Bowl. What's the talk about it for the Atlanta media for the Falcons this year?
Yeah, the fans and the media are a little bit down on them. They don't see a Super Bowl contending team. You know, they see an 8-8 team, 9-7, which is an improvement over 4-12. But there are just too many holes and too many things that have to be answered positively for them to be considered a contender. They don't have a pass rush. The line hasn't blocked very well. And your main running back is 31 years old. And the linebackers are former undrafted players. So there are a lot of things that they're banking on to make them contenders. And the folks seem to realize that this team is not close to being in the league with Seattle and San Francisco and maybe even New Orleans.
Well, down here in Tampa, the optimism is real high with Lovie Smith down here as your head coach up there and that. So I'm going to see how a week from Thursday, see Washington over there. See the first test of my first view of the Buccos this year. So I think with Lovie Smith, there's much improvement over Greg Schiano, which people have been telling me the sources over there. So they're excited over there, but the thing is the offensive line, the kicking game, and the DBs for the Bucs. That just scares the living heck out of me.
Yeah, the Bucs are going to be much improved. I really like their linebackers in their front with Gerald McCoy and Levante David. They might be the best duo defensively in the NFC South. Quarterback-wise, you got to remember Lovie is used to doing a lot with the little at quarterback. He took a team to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman as the quarterback. So everybody's kind of looking at Tampa as a team on the come this year, and I think that might be correct.
You know, Darrell, I got to tell you, watching that Cleveland game the other night reminded me when Connor Shaw went in there when I was doing the Flowery Branch High School games, and Connor was the quarterback 4 or 5 years ago, and you know, they made the decision today, Mike Pettine did, about who's going to start. It's not Johnny football, but what do you think? You know, you get to see a lot of talent. Did you see that game the other night? And if you did, what did you think of Connor Shaw's performance? Because he grew up right up the road from you.
Yeah, Roger, I did watch that whole game. I wanted to see the quarterbacks, and Connor came in there and held his own and almost tied the game up with a late touchdown pass. But we know he's a tough kid. Got a lot out of his talents at South Carolina, and you know, led them to 2-11 win seasons back to back for the first time in school history. So it was delightful to see him play, and hopefully he can stick as one of the backup quarterbacks in Cleveland.
Yeah, you and I could be his PR team, I think.
Oh, no doubt. I like the Shaw family. He's a good kid and good family.
That's right. I'm with you.
Roger and everybody, I got to ask you, I still the fact that Johnny Manziel, we did the Washington Redskins defense, that was inexcusable, classless thing for a pro football player to do.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And, you know, if you don't let the other team get underneath your skin in a preseason game, you know, what's going to happen in the fourth quarter with the game on the line and everybody's talking? But, you know, that's no question about it. There's no place in football for that.
So you can only wonder whether he's going to be able to really ever learn. You know, I mean, it's one thing now. I heard today that some of the players are saying he doesn't spend the time on the playbook and film like he should. I don't know. You know, you hear everything about this kid.
Yeah, well, we'll know. He'll be either out of the league in 2 years or be a big star, one or the other.
That's right. Darryl, I want, you know, also want to let the listeners know that Darryl's the president of the Pro Football Writers Association, and I see that today they announced the senior candidate for the Hall of Fame, Mick Tinglehoff, the old center for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, that Mick Tinglehoff is one of the guys who played a long time and might have been overlooked. The seniors committee, they spend a lot of time bringing guys back. Last year, they got Ray Guy in and Claude Humphrey, the first old-school Falcon. So Mick Tinglehoff will be an interesting one for the committee to consider.
Yeah. I wonder when we'll see number 87's number retired from the Falcons. They've got the banner up in the on the ceiling at the dome, but I saw there's still a number 87 playing this year.
Yeah, they do the Ring of Honor deal, and then sometimes they don't reissue numbers, but they had to get approval to release Deion Sanders' numbers last year to Desmond Trufant. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle number 87.
Yeah, another Hall of Famer.
That's right. I remember the old Mick Tinglehoff days of Minnesota, old Metropolitan Stadium up there. It was like 30. Remember, it's 30 degrees. He always had his short sleeve jersey on, and ready to center that ball for great Viking teams up there. Wow, so Fran Tarkenton and all those great teams they had up there.
Well, you know what, Tommy? You know, Darryl also covered the Packers for many years up in Green Bay.
Ooh.
And he can tell you a lot of stories about having dinner with Andy Reid at night after practice, when Andy was just like the quarterback's coach, you know, and the position coach. So, Darryl, tell Tommy and Frank a couple of Andy Reid stories.
Yeah, Coach Andy was the tight ends coach in Green Bay. I was up there in the 90s, so I never covered a game at the old Met, but I saw the old film where Bud Grant wouldn't put the heaters on the on his sideline. It's one of the great old football stories, but I was there for the Randy Moss era when they blow that horn in the Metro Dome and get the fans all fired up with that pumped-in music. But, yeah, Coach Andy was on that staff along with Gruden. Sherman Lewis was one of my assistant coaches there at was very, very good and kind to the media. But Andy was awesome. He's the tight ends coach there with Keith Jackson and Chamora. He's got those guys going, and he was one of Coach Holmgren's main lieutenants up there, getting his career started after his days with LaVille Edwards out in Brigham Young. So, yeah, Andy has been a good guy and a long-time source for us here at the in the NFL for me.
You talk about Gruden, I remember when Ray Rhodes took the Eagles job, and he took John Gruden as his offensive coordinator, and, of course, the rest was history. He went to Oakland, and then Tampa and won the Super Bowl. But he's gone into a whole other career now, fellas, hasn't he?
Yes. Yeah, I agree with Andy Reid's story. When he coached the Eagles, when the Eagles were playing the Bucs in Tampa, and it was so great because after his pressing, Andy, did you know you have an Eagles fan club down here, about 400 people watch every Eagles game. We cheer every move. And sometimes you question your move. He says, really? Oh, my God, it's fantastic. You have an Eagles fan club in Tampa, home of the Bucs.
I know he liked that, Tommy.
But we have an Eagles fan club up here. Darryl, I got to tell you a funny story. We had the Eagles fan club, the DoubleTree Hotel, which, Chris does a great job down there and that, preparing for us. We have cheesesteaks down there, and I told this to Roger and Frank, the story. Some guy had a Dallas Cowboys shirt on there, right? And I said, buddy, I would sit in this bar with that Dallas Cowboys shirt on. So he left. Well, you know how Eagle fans are. They're passionate football fans. We hate the star. When every time we see a star in our bar, get him out of there.
Yeah, that's hardcore. Y'all have a good, long-standing reputation.
Oh, I know.
I can remember talking to Steve Weiss before he went to the NFL Network, and now we were talking about the parking in the middle of Broad Street right there.
Yeah. Well, Roger, when the Philadelphia teams won a championship, right there, the public transportation is called SEFTA, Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, right? And
uh-huh.
All the people say, I can beat the system now. Jump on the turnstiles and be riding SEFTA for free up there. Roger, remember that stop on Broad Street? And it was so funny, Darryl. They had to usually go down there for an Eagles doubleheader and a Flyers doubleheader. So a buddy of mine went down there. We meet a couple guys down there. So we took SEFTA down there. Roger was, it's your Broad Street line. We got out of there and says, boy, thank God we got out of that terminal.
Well, I'll tell you one thing the link has, and I know Darryl knows this, and the media parking is much more convenient than it is in the dome.
Uh-oh.
I hope it improves at the new stadium for everybody, Darryl.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense to have a parking lot right next to the media entrance that they used to use. The goal lot, but for some reason they thought the media wanted to walk or we needed exercise or something.
Yeah.
And then they stopped using the media lot to give it to, I think, the players park there if they want to come. But, the parking arrangements leave a little bit to be desired.
It's like a mile walk. It's like almost a mile.
Well, the media parks at the Ray J, you got a beautiful new stadium, and you're parking on grass. Usually, lot six. By the time I get there early, the traffic go up to lot six, and then, and I said after the game, after feeding frenzy up there, I said, thank God I'm in lot six. I get to walk this off here. You know.
That parking lot's right there, I believe. Just across the street.
I'm looking forward to football season right now, and the Rays right now are losing to Detroit 1-0. What happened to Cabrera? Miguel Cabrera had a single. Victor Martinez knocked him with a double, and Cabrera's limping around the base pads. And Ben Zobel's got a one-out double down the line here, Tropicana Field. But it's just amazing, Darryl. We were talking football. Now, Cleveland Gladiators got a team in the AFL, okay? Now, the Gladiators won that game Saturday night in Cleveland. It'll be the first time a football championship has been won in Cleveland since 64.
Wow. And that's great for the city. And, of course, with LeBron coming back, that's got everybody psyched up. Daryl, let me ask you before we, you know, you have to leave, but I wanted to ask you, in the NFC South, do you feel that New Orleans will rebound and win it, or do you think Carolina is strong enough, or Tampa or the Falcons?
Yeah, I think New Orleans has to be the favorite, Roger. They went out and spent money with Jarius Bird. They have Bird and Kenny Vaccaro back there at safety to kind of, you know, cover up any mistakes. And I owe Coach Bill Johnson here. Done a great job with developing defensive linemen for him. He's got Cam Jordan playing really at a high level and Junior Gillette. So that defense kind of elevates the Saints over everybody because they can, you know, we know what they can do offensively.
Wow. Yeah, how do you think the Panthers will do this year? I mean, they lost several players to free agency.
Yeah, they did. Cam's developing. They have some great linebackers in Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly. But I thought last year they just kind of won with the smoke and mirrors and a lot of gambles and stuff like that that paid off for them. So we'll see if they could duplicate that. You know, and they don't have Steve Smith. They lost Jordan Groves. It just seems to be like they have too many holes to be considered the contender, a legitimate contender in the NFC.
Yeah, I feel the same way you do, and but, you know, only time will tell.
Oh, yeah.
Well, listen, Daryl, have a great season.
Yes.
It's always great. We appreciate you coming on, and
God
bless. Take care and always be safe, and take care of all those coaches out there in Cobb County.
All right, thank you, Roger.
I appreciate all your efforts out there for me.
Yes, thank you, Daryl. Always a pleasure, sir.
Take care. God bless.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye now.
What a great guy, Tommy, and knowledgeable guy, and just a joy to be around, and you know, whenever
he's your sitting buddy, right? He's your partner down there for the Falcons.
Yeah, well, I sit next to William Peace, and then Daryl's a few seats down. But we always, you know, get together and talk. What's this play? What is this play all about? You know.
Well, Roger, but, we have another friend here that's going to give us the update on what's up north.
There we go.
George
is here.
Joe Foreman.
Hi, George. Welcome to the program, sir. Always a pleasure to have you on, sir.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to join you guys.
George, how's everything along the New Jersey Turnpike at the Meadowlands this year?
Well, it's going to be pretty hectic up there Friday night with the annual Super Bowl, Jets-Giants. So that should be pretty interesting. Always a lot to going on, not only between the fans, but the players are getting some things going. And would you know it, the media started one today with the rookie running back for the Giants trying to make the team, Andre Williams, saying that New Jersey is really a Giants state and not a Jets state. And the Jets got into that with Rex Ryan saying, I don't know why he's talking. Last time I saw him, he was getting pounded by Clemson in the bowl game. The kid from Boston College. He was like fourth in the Heisman Trophy voting. He had like 2,100 yards for Boston College. And he innocently said, well, you know, New Jersey's a giant state. And the Jets people didn't like that. And so then they had a lot of fans calling in on the talk thing, and there were 70% of them said, yeah, he's right. It is a giant state. And, of course, Rex Ryan stepped in and says, you know, I don't know what he's shooting his mouth off for. The last time I saw him, he was getting pounded by Clemson.
As only Rex
that's where
his father
up here
could come up with a comment like that, right, George?
Yes, that's right.
Buddy was always a pleasure, I'll tell you, to get his comments. You know, I'll just never forget that time, and it was like the last show. Don was doing the show with Buddy. We talked about it before. And after the Eagles lost, and a guy calls in and he said, hey, Coach, I understand Randall can't get in his front door in his house. What do you mean he can't? He's got an Guy says he's got an end zone in the front yard.
Well, you remember a couple of years ago, the Giants Super Bowl year when they knocked off the Jets, and the Jets were fighting for the playoffs, and they had words between Brandon Jacobs and Rex Ryan, and Brandon apparently told him, he says, "Take that one, fat boy," and Rex snapped back at him, and Brandon Jacobs made some kind of a remark. Well, what do you expect? He's just like his old man when he went after Kevin Gilbride. Remember that night?
Tennessee.
Yep.
So I'll tell you, you know, I'll tell you, George, you know, you and I go back when we were doing the Troy Vincent show, and boy, has Troy risen to the heights, huh? Executive VP of operations for the NFL.
Well, that's great. He's a great guy and deserves a break. You know, I always think about Troy, how he transferred out of Trent High and went to Pensbury. And our buddy Rick Fortenbaugh tried to get it to Pensbury, you know, tried to get Pitt to go after him, and they said, "Nah, we don't know nothing about him." And Rick said, "He's the greatest high school player I've ever seen." And the next thing you know, Troy went to Wisconsin. And Rick wrote back to the head coaching staff, said, "See, I told you this kid was good, and you wouldn't take him."
Right. There you go. And his son's a freshman at North Carolina State.
Yep. Yes.
So,
how's everything with you, Roger? Everything good?
Everything's good. You know, I wanted to ask you, Frank and I were talking about this earlier today because I was looking at the Temple roster, and there's a number of kids, Tommy, you know about this too, a number of kids are from South Florida, South and Central Florida on Temple. But there's one kid, of course, he was there at Nottingham after I left. But tell me, what do you think about this kid, Mezde, who went to a prep school? What is he, a linebacker, George? And how do you think he'll do with Temple in this new All-American Conference that started last year?
I think the kid's got a shot. He was decent in high school. You know, he just didn't have the grades, and so he had to, you know, kind of get ready. But, I mean, I think he can help them. They got Saquon Hampton from Nottingham, who should be getting a lot of time at Rutgers as a freshman defensive back.
Right. Mm. Have you heard anything from our man? Tommy knows him very well, too. We talk about it, Tyquan Underwood. Have you heard from him recently?
No, haven't heard from Tyquan. I got to check it out. We're getting ready. The coaches are getting ready now. This week they're starting preseason training. But I haven't heard from Tyquan in a while.
George and I talked about this earlier. You guys we talked about it last week about Coach Eric Hamilton's son was hit a week ago Sunday by a hit and run driver. And George, bring everybody up to date on that situation.
Yeah, well, they're still looking because they got some video of the car that hit him, and they got some tape from I don't know where they got it from, but he got hit. He was walking home. It was like 2 in the morning right near his house.
Mm.
And a car ran him over, and they tried to get him out. And the guy went back and forth about 3 times. All it did was rip up his whole side. He had a broken pelvis and a couple other things. But he's been in recuperation, and they're about ready to send him to a rehab center now. He's been in the hospital about 2 weeks.
Wow.
Well, we're praying for him because that's a really awful situation. And I think you told me he's like one of the assistants at Hamilton West, right?
No. That was the older boy who's now up at, I think he was up in Maine.
Oh, okay.
I think he's got a job, a government job up in Maine.
Sad situation, and Eric Hamilton's also the president of the Delaware Valley chapter of the Football Foundation. Foundation. Yeah.
Did you get your email from the National Football Foundation about the boys that are nominated for the National Scholar Athlete Award?
I did, yes. Yeah.
Did you notice who the first candidate was listed from the Delaware Valley Northeast chapter? Was Nick DeMaria from Nottingham High School.
Going
to Penn.
And is he at Penn?
He will be a freshman at Penn. He was the He was the scholar athlete up here in the Delaware Valley chapter, won the $5,000 scholarship.
Yeah,
Nottingham North Star.
Yeah, I remember that, and Wes sent me the program. The other thing we want to let everybody know is that the new College Football Hall of Fame is open in Atlanta. You know, open this week, and a lot of activity going on here, and of course with next week with the Chick-fil-A Bowl Classic, the opening season games. It'll be a hot time in the old town tonight down in Atlanta.
Roger.
Yeah.
Roger, one of the guys involved with the National Football Foundation, isn't it Tom Dilatush?
Yeah, it is.
I think he's
in Dallas.
He's
and,
a West Windsor guy. He's from Mercer County.
He is. And he was on with Bob Cassiola when Bob had the office up in Morristown and Cranberry. And he's a great guy. And a matter of fact, I was with him when he was here for a meeting last year. But what's happened here is that the Touchdown Club and the Football Foundation merged, and it's really Touchdown. I'm a member, but I just it's not what you and I are used to, George. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Well, our chapter's still going good. It's just that some of the others are fading up in, Middlesex County. And
it's sad. It's a great organization, and I know Frank knows about it, and Frank's so involved with youth football that, and it's so important. George, getting back to the Giants, how do you think that they will do this year? You think that they'll rebound and do better than they did last year with 7-9?
Well, you know, that 7-9. Stop and think about it. That started with an 0-6 start.
Right.
I remember the first Eli Manning's first play of the season down in Dallas was tipped by a lineman from the Cowboys and returned for a touchdown.
Right.
Eli's first pass of the season returned for a touchdown, interception.
Wow.
And then it just went down after that. I mean, they were 0-6. But remember, all six of the teams they lost to, they got blown out in Carolina. They lost to Denver up here. They lost their opening game to Dallas. They lost to the Eagles. All the teams they lost to in those first six games all went to the playoffs.
Wow. That's
right.
So that was a pretty tough start for them. But now with this new West Coast offense that they're running, that Ben McAdoo, their new offensive coordinator, came in from the Packers, they really haven't been able to do anything. I think Eli's completed one pass in the preseason, and he's only played like the first quarter of each game. But they're 3-0 because their backups, Ryan Nisab, the quarterback who's battling for the number two job against Curtis Painter, he's twice now in the preseason. He's led them in a fourth quarter comeback. And they got a kid, Roger. I don't know if you ever heard of this kid, Corey Washington, 6'4" out of Newberry. You know where Newberry is in South Carolina?
Oh, I know where it is. Yeah, it's over there on I-26.
Well, this kid is going to probably make the Giants as a walk-on.
Wow.
Free agent walk-on that they signed out of Newberry. He's gotten the winning touchdown on a pass reception in three straight preseason games, including a 73-yarder that he returned in the opening game against, was that the game against Buffalo? And then he caught a four-yard touchdown pass in the final minute when they beat Indianapolis, and then he had another one against Pittsburgh.
I'll tell you, George, go ahead. I was just going to say, so many times that they find a diamond in the rough, don't they? I mean, this kid from Newberry, the Falcons middle linebacker, an undrafted free agent last year, Paul Wardlow, out of Delaware, and you know, who knows what's going to happen? Connor Shaw was taken as an undrafted free agent, and he might wind up being the backup quarterback, or at least a quarterback on the Browns. So, you know, as extensive as the scouting departments are, so many times a nugget in the pile shows up. And I know Tommy and Frank, you guys have seen that over the years many times, too.
Well, you know, Roger, we have a guy on with us now who finds those nuggets every single year as he spends a lot of time looking for talent within the district in his boundaries, and each year comes out with a tremendous team. Coach Dan Marino, Dave Marino. Dave, how you doing tonight?
Dave,
hi,
how you doing,
Frank, how you doing?
Doing good.
Great.
Hello, Dave.
Hey, Dave, George is born from up at the Trentonian, and I know you're a Northeast guy.
Oh, yeah. Great. Matter of fact, you know, our tailback from last year, Josh Hicks, is up at Rutgers right now, and, you know, incoming freshman, and it's all been rave reviews, and they think he's, you know, he's going to be able to come in and make an impact and play as a freshman.
Nice.
Don't you have some other players up in the Lehigh Valley area, Philadelphia area, too?
We had a kid 2 years ago that had committed and signed his letter of intent to go to Temple, but he ended up, you know, Temple was waiting on his last test score, and unfortunately, he didn't get a high enough test score to actually get in, and so he ended up having to go to Coffeyville Junior College. So,
Kansas.
You know, hopefully, So hopefully another year from now, you know, maybe he's going to, you know, he should be back in the Philadelphia area at Temple.
Wow. Oh, great.
Coach, I can't believe how fast the summer went. We talked to you before. You're a very successful program. Are you going through workouts right now? Are you just going out for basically no contact at all, just workout in shorts right now for your football team?
No, actually, in Florida, it's it all starts this Friday. The Friday night lights begin this Friday. We've been in, you know, we went through our whole summer conditioning program, and then we've been in preseason practice for the last 2 weeks. And so, like I said, this is basically our third week of practice. And, you know, like I said, we'll be opening up Friday night with a preseason kickoff classic game. And then the following week, the 29th, is actually, you know, when colleges start, so do high school games in Florida. So that's our first real regular season game next Friday.
Where does summer go?
In Georgia, they're in the third week of classes, and Georgia will tell you, up in the Northeast, they're just starting practice for the season, right, George?
Well, that's in Jersey now, but over in Pennsylvania, a week from Friday, the Bucks County League starts. And the Chamonix expected to be one of the top five teams in southeastern Pennsylvania. And Pennsbury's got some big recruits coming in, and they should be very good. They open up 2 weeks before the New Jersey schools.
Well, they're like you, Dan. Pennsylvania opens up the same time you do.
Yeah, it's football's back, boys. We're back in it.
Dave, what's your team going to look like this year?
Well, you know, we have our quarterback back, Jack Allison. He's actually he came out in the ESPN rankings this summer as number. He was the number four quarterback in ESPN's 2016 class of quarterbacks. So, and he's committed. Right now, he's an early commit to the University of Miami.
Thank you.
And we got a lot of receivers back from last year as well. So, you know, we're looking to throw the football around a little bit this year. And, you know, preseason, summer went real well. We won a couple, we won a couple 7-on-7 tournaments. And, you know, the kids have really, you know, worked hard and gelled well together. And so, you know, we're looking offensively to, you know, move the football, put some points on the board consistently. And defensively, you know, we got a couple, you know, anchors from last year's defensive line. And the back end going to be a question mark. But we do have our front three back from last year. So we got three returning defensive linemen that we'll be able to anchor our team around. So, you know, we're looking forward to a good year. And, you know, it's going to be exciting to see, you know, how well we do this Friday against some, you know, some different players. You know, I mean, we've been going against ourselves now, like I said, for 3 weeks. And we're anxious to go and hit somebody else.
What's the day you go around, when you mentioned the 7-on-7, do you travel to go to those tournaments like George and I are familiar with, like up in central New Jersey? There's a 7-on-7, and every year it's pretty much the same team. But do you take the team? Are you able to go around where they have tournaments maybe in throughout Florida and the Southeast?
Yeah, actually, what we try to do I try to schedule one game a week against another opponent in the area, usually an opponent that we don't play during the regular season. And then we also go, we went into the USF tournament. So we'll go to a couple college tournaments. And so, for example, we went to the USF tournament, and we finished in the Final Four and lost in the Final Four. And then we went to a tournament in Sarasota, and that was more of a regional tournament. We ended up winning that one. And so, we try to get at least one single game in a week, and then probably two times throughout the summer we go to an all-weekend tournament, a Saturday-Sunday tournament.
Wow.
Great experience.
Who do you have against on Friday night, Dave?
We play Riverview, Sarasota Riverview High School this Friday in the preseason classic. And then we open up with Venice in week one and St. Pete Lakewood in week two and Clearwater Countryside in week three. So, right out of the gate, it's a tough schedule because we got, they have a combined record of 28-2. It's one of those deals where St. Pete Lakewood lost one game, the Countryside. Countryside goes undefeated. And we actually ended up beating Countryside last year. So, it's a slugfest with some heavyweights right in the beginning. And we really, we do that on purpose. And I've been in the business a long time, and I always want to schedule tough, bigger, stronger, top-notch opponents early on, just to see where you are, where your weaknesses are, and where you need to get to in order to make that district playoff run when you get into October, and then obviously in the early November. So,
mm-hmm. Hey Tommy, Coach Dave had the pleasure of coaching not only Rogers Cromartie, but a couple guys from our team. Joe Hill and the Smith brothers.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Dave, Joe Hill is one of the best receivers, I think probably, ranks up in Storm history. He's up in Canada now playing football. That's a great tribute for yourself, what you did for Coach Joe Hill. He's a nice young man.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, Dominique Rogers Cromartie's story is so like everyone else's in the NFL. Coming out of high school, it took everything to get him a scholarship. He was a little undersized. He was just one of those kids that's just a late bloomer. And like I said, in the last for Tennessee State, and then he just continued to develop and work hard. And then ended up getting a chance, in the NFL, with the Cardinals. He was drafted late by the Cardinals, and like I said, just made the most of his opportunities. What a career for a guy. Who didn't get a chance to go to the Alabamas or the big, flashy schools, to come from a 1AA program, and he's played in two Super Bowls now, one with the Cardinals and then last year with the Broncos. And so, now he's with the Giants, he's been with the Eagles, and so like I said, he's had a heck of a career for a guy that's, like I said, really come out of nowhere. And, he's just a credit.
Yeah,
he's just a
interesting. The interesting thing about Dominique is Friday night he's with the Giants, and they're playing the Jets, and he was up here the weekend, and he talked to the Jets about an offer, and he was all ready to go, and then they said, wait a minute, let's see what the Giants are offering. The next day he signs with the Giants.
Yeah.
They're really excited about having him because it solidifies their defensive secondary, which they were really hurting on last year.
Yeah, it was a great – it was a great situation because, I told Dominique, he had a friend, before he even got to the Giants. My offensive line coach, Pat Flaherty, Pat coached me at Rutgers, and, he's obviously with the Giants, and, he's a great guy, great family man. And, I told Dominique, I said, as soon as you get off the plane, make sure, you connect with Coach Flaherty. He's a good guy. He'll take care of you. He'll show you around the Northeast, and like I said, you got a little bit of a security in that regard. And so, like I said, he just liked the culture, liked the players, and liked the situation and the organization. And, he's real happy to be up there. And, like I said, he's a first-class guy. He just started a program down here where he's going to send at-risk kids, underprivileged kids, on a weekend trip. So they're going to get to come up and watch a Giants game. They're going to stay all expenses paid in New York City, in Times Square. And like I said, it's going to be an unbelievable opportunity for these kids to come from, you know, basically little old Palmetto and Manatee County, Florida, and be able to get in there and experience the bright lights of Manhattan and New York City. And so it's really a great thing. His foundation has done so much for our local community down there.
Wow. Coach, it goes back to you. What you taught these kids growing up, playing on the football and off the football field, great reflection you.
Yeah, he's like I said, I'm proud of him. You know, we're all proud of him, and he just continues to give back to our local community, you know, to the Boys and Girls Club, and he just does so much, and it's, like I said, it's just a credit to, you know, like I said, to his upbringing as well, and he's just a well-grounded kid, and that's the reason why he's had success. You know, a lot of those guys that get to go to the Alabamas and the LSUs and you know, Floridas and the Florida States, you know, sometimes, you know, you got to take that tougher road to be able to handle the stress and intensity of the NFL.
That's fantastic. Up there here at Rays game, Juan Mara's first game back in 2 months, grounded out the third, 1-0 Detroit. Bottom of the third inning here. Pitching matchup is Jake Odorizzi versus Jake's going to be versus Rick Porcello. Bottom three, it's a Tropicana Field, 1-0 Detroit. But this will give you guys an update. We're broadcasting live from Patty's Bar at Tropicana Field, and I see Mr. Rick Vaughn walking around. Thank you. I have to thank Rick Vaughn for having us here tonight. And we have one more Wednesday broadcast when the Yankees are in town, about 3 weeks away to come back to town, guys. So to thank the Rays and Patty's Bar for broadcasting live, guys.
That's great. Hey, Dave, I wanted to ask you about Rogers Cromartie and George to jump in, too. You know, he was, when they signed him with the Eagles in that disastrous season a couple of years ago, he was like opposite of Nami Asawa. And they did not produce. But he has produced every place he's ever been. Do you think that the problem was that he was put in to a bad situation as far as the scheme of the defense went?
Yeah, he, you know, his skill set, he's a long, rangy cover corner. You know, he's not, you know, when he was with the Eagles, they asked him to play, you know, in the slot a lot. You know what I mean? And that's not his strength, you know, because like I said, I believe they had Nnamdi on one side, and really, Nnamdi didn't fit. You know, his skill set.
No, he didn't
really
do well at all.
You know, his skill set really wasn't conducive for, you know, the schemes the Eagles were running. So, you know, it was just one of those things. And, you know, but it was an experience that I think Dominique learned from, as we all do. You know, whether it's positive or negative experiences, we learn from all of them. And, you know, he had the opportunity to be a little bit more physical and maybe develop that part of his game a little bit better. And so, you know, it was what it was. He had, you know, he had a great time. You know, he had some great experiences in Philadelphia with the Eagles, and like I said, it made him more prepared and you know, better equipped to do what he's able to do in Denver.
Well, if George got to see him when he was with the Eagles, and of course now he's going to get to see him with the Giants, and I guess he's really solidified that defensive backfield, huh, George?
Yeah, he has, really. That was a problem last year, but they solidified it. They, a couple of guys have left, and, you know, they got Antoine Roll there. He's been around now forever, it seems.
Oh,
he's,
yeah.
You know, they're real excited about their secondary.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, Dominique's every bit of 6'3". And so when you have a 6'3 corner, like I said, with length and range, that can run. I mean, he can flat-out fly now. You know, I mean, he's a legitimate 4'3 guy. And so, you know, that's what he does best. But, you know, like I said, to ask him to go inside, play in the slot, be a run support guy, that's, like I said, that doesn't play into his strengths. And so, you know, I think in the Giants scheme, you know, I have all the respect in the world for their staff up there. He'll do well, and they'll put him in position where he can flourish and utilize his skill set.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to that.
Yes,
you know,
I think so.
What you just said, Dave, is so important because I can remember years ago when the Eagles had Troy Vincent and Bobby Taylor. You know, Troy was a tackler, Bobby was a cover guy. mm-hmm. and, you know, not known for his tackling, but they both had height. I think Bobby was like 6'3", 6'4". I know Troy's 6'2". But mm-hmm. you're exactly right. You've got to put a player in a position where he can execute to the best of his talent, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's why they put coach in front of our name.
Right.
That's right.
You know,
that's
there's
right.
A lot of
we're just the fans. We're just
a
fans
of
football so much.
Yeah,
you got
people,
their coach
of
football.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that have opinions and everything, but, you know, hey, that's our job. If you can't analyze talent, evaluate talent, you know, and that's a big part of it. You know, everybody thinks, you know, it's calling plays, but really that's secondary. Can you really evaluate a player's skill set and put them in the right spot so that they can utilize their skill set? That's really the first step in the process.
Tommy, we're joined by the late Don Henderson.
Hello! I'd like to welcome to Philadelphia legend, Mr. Don Henderson. Don, 1-0 Detroit down here at the Trop. Miguel Cabrera, 1-for-1 single. We got a run in the first inning in that. But, Don, it's great to see Derek Jeter live and have an RBI on a Sunday afternoon. And it was great to watch Derek Jeter live.
Tommy, I'm just waiting that Thomas Davis is doing. I heard it was a 1-0 game up there in Williamsport. They had 32,000-plus there when she played the last game on Sunday night. And it just started at 7:30 tonight. Obviously, I can't see it. I'm in the car, so I can't see it. Talk to you guys at the same time. But
we're gonna get it. Nevada's up 1-0, and it's in the first inning.
Good, good.
Hey, Roger, Don. Roger and Don,
Don,
it's George up in Trenton.
You can't
believe all the excitement here, even in Jersey, over this tiny little league in Monet. I mean, you know, they've adopted them now as if they're Jersey kids.
Hey,
that's amazing.
I'm telling you, the other night when I watched it on TV and I said, they had 32,000-plus, and it was a terrific game. I don't know whether you had a chance to see it or not, but it was a terrific, terrific game, and they won it, of course, in the bottom of the sixth inning. And I think there were more people watching that game on TV than were watching the Phillies.
It's better baseball. They're watching better baseball with those kids.
It is better. You're right, George. Yeah. It is better baseball.
You are right. It is better. It was a fun game to watch, a lot of offense. And, you know, it's funny, Bobby Valentine, I watched the Mets game 2 days ago. They played an afternoon game at home, and Bobby Valentine was on the post-game show. And I was amazed. He said, baseball right now is the most boring it's ever been. Who would the New York Mets play 5 straight games where they got 4 hits?
Oh, my God.
And, you know, it tied a club record. Of course, they held the record themselves for a number of years. But I forget how many teams he said had gone 5 games in a row with only 4 base hits. And, you know, last night they didn't get the 5th one until about the, sixth inning, was it, Roger, something like that?
Yeah.
But, I'd like to welcome a good friend of mine, good friend of the program, former Major League umpire, great umpire, Richie Garcia. Richie, how was your trip to Michigan, first off? Did you have a good time up there?
Oh, it was great. Great. They got the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful golf courses up there. Just unbelievable.
Richie, tell me, what can they do with this baseball to make it better? Not only is it defensively poor, but, I mean, you have more teams with guys hitting 195 and 212 than you have players. It's unbelievable to watch.
I don't know. Personally, I still enjoy the game. I have a tough time with some of the things that are going on. This rule with the catcher blocking the plate, that kind of stuff. I have a tough time with that. The way it's being interpreted and how quick they did it, and it's just taking too much away from the game. That's just I don't know. And I guess it's all going together. You got like you guys were saying, you got guys hitting 240, 250 that are not only making a lot of money, but they're in the lineup every day. A few years ago, you didn't have that. You didn't, you know, you hit 240, you'd be playing in the minor leagues. But
that's right,
you know, that's
exactly right. Richie, I saw David the last night. I was coming late from work, and so I sent a guy a little card, and I got two dogs. He knows that Bugsy Capone. So I know I told this to Don Roger and Frank heard about this. I said, "Dear Astro, bark bark. How's your new home in Detroit? Bark bark. Hope your master has a great year. Bark bark bark. Love Bugsy Capone." I was in a clubhouse. You know, he says, "Tommy, David, come here." Gives me a big hug, not once but twice. He opened the card up. I never heard him saw him laugh part of my life. He wanted a picture of Bugsy Capone, and that was great. It's going to great to his scrapbook. It said for Astro.
Well, you were talking about the umpiring, about blocking home plate, and I agree with you 100%. And I talked about how much I enjoyed the Sunday night game in the Little League. They have a different set of rules there, but I'll tell you, they use the replay more times than they do in the major leagues. I couldn't believe it. And also the system. First of all, the manager comes out, then the four umpires come out, and they converse and make a decision. Then they go back and look at the replay. And, they must have had 6 or 7 replays in that game in 5.5 innings. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. It's just it stopped the game. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's
you're
happening.
Right,
Don. You know, that's happening. It's happening right now. You see it. They come out. They it just takes too much time, and it just takes the momentum away from the game, and it just takes. I don't know. I'm thinking that I'll get used to it, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. So,
I know one thing. I never get used to it. I just like the game umpire. This replay has got to go. It's like the baseball and all the sports, Richie, you know, is a natural stuff. It was long before replay. Umpires did a great job behind home plate or any sport they refereed at, especially the umpires today. I mean, so many decisions. I just don't like replay at all. I don't care for it at all about that.
Yeah.
Nah,
well,
you're right.
There's so much to the – to the umpiring profession today. There's so much on the umpire's shoulders. I remember in 2000, the year 2000, where when I started working as a supervisor, MLB, they wanted to take the attention away from the umpires. Just take the attention away from them. Let's play the game and let the umpires umpire the game, you know. Nobody needs to know who they are. Nobody needs, you know. And I thought, well, you know, it might be a pretty good idea. But now with this replay, the attention, you got 100% attention on the umpires. Every time there's a play, you know, the attention is on the umpires.
Oh, right.
So,
well, I think the other thing they have to do is, Tim McCarver and I have done a number of shows over the last two and a half years, and he's a very, very big advocate and has been for a number of years about blocking a plate. He talks about the concussions and the injuries that take place, like Posey a couple of years ago, out for a full year. And so he's been a very strong advocate of not allowing you to block the plate. But to me, they got to make a ruling. You know, they got to make a decision as to how they're going to call it. The other night, the catcher had his left foot on the line, and they ruled that was blocking the plate. Well, I don't know how that could be blocking the plate. And the next night, the same thing happened, and the guy had his foot on the line. They called nothing. It's so inconsistent.
Well, you got to remember that it's still going to be a judgment by a human being sitting in the booth. The guy in New York. The umpire that's sitting there in New York watching the game, that's making the decision, you know, he's got to use his judgment. So there's still judgment involved. You know, there's still a lot of judgment involved. But what I can't get is when a guy is out by 10 feet, you know, a guy is out by 10 feet. You know, who cares if the catcher was blocking the plate or had his foot in front of the plate or the guy didn't have a lane? I mean, who cares? You know. The thing about it, what they don't want is they don't want the catcher getting hit. They don't want the catcher getting hit when he doesn't have his shoulder squared to the runner.
Correct.
I understand that part. I understand that they don't want a guy getting blindsided and you know, getting hurt and all that. I understand that. But how many times does that happen? You know, how many times does that happen? And it's very, very easy to stop. How you stop it is, if a base runner runs into a catcher when the catcher does not have possession of the ball and he's not blocking the plate, any incident like that, you call the runner out and then you suspend them for 10 days. Suspend them for 10 games, and I guarantee you that won't happen again. They
yes.
know they're going to get suspended, but they'll never do that. Major League Baseball will never do that. They're not going to suspend a guy for 10 days. You don't even see anybody getting suspended now for anything. They had a beanball the other day. They threw the pitcher out. Nobody got suspended.
Oh boy, that's bad. Because Richie, what was down with the Yankees were in town here. This is just irritating. The Yankees are in our house, right? And when Jake flew over to first base to see Derek was back there safe, the Yankee fans started outnumbering our fans, started booing up us. Oh no, here we go again. But Richie, I mean, you know, you umpired with Derek Jeter. I think baseball is going to lose one class individual, one Derek Jeter, when he plays his final games in September. I'm going to be a tear to my eye because Derek is. We think of Derek, you think class individual. You think him of the New York Yankees up there and that. But he had an RBI against us the other day. But it's great to see him swinging a good bat.
Yeah, no doubt. He's a special individual, a special player, and all the accolades that he's getting, he deserves. And he's been a good citizen for the game. You know, he's a good advocate for the game of baseball, and we should have more guys like that.
Well, I think with the Rays got a couple guys like that. It's coming about Evan Longoria, Ben Zobrist, Matt Joyce, Alex Cobb, David DeJesus, the good people the Rays got in the locker room up there. And it all goes down to Joe Maddon up there, Rich. And it's Joe's, I don't care, Joe's got us to 500, a couple games back right now, but this Detroit team is good pitching right now. But David Price going against Alex Cobb, and that's going to be one great baseball game. David comes back to Tropicana Field.
Well, Tommy, yeah. Like anything else, you get one of those strings going, you're looking from the All-Star break till they got to 500 against the Yankees the other night. You know, they were on a heck of a run. But the only thing is, you use up all your energy to get to 500.
Right.
And then after they got to 500, they lose three games in a row. I mean, the momentum shifts so quickly, depending on the pitcher that night.
And you know, you can't expect, you know, if you're 18 games under 500 and you get to 500, you can't expect the team to keep that going. There's no way in the world they can keep that going. So,
right.
And something's got to give. Something's got to give.
Exactly. Richie, do you think the Rays pitchers are, you know, like Jake's Rizzi's pitching tonight, do you think these pitchers are getting tired right now? Because they used to pitch in minor league schedule, and that's about it after our young pitchers out there.
Well, they've been baby. You know, they've been baby. They're baby in the minor leagues as far as how many pitches they're going to throw and this and that. And so now when you get, you know, when you get here, you need a guy to get out of a jam. You need a guy to finish that seventh inning. They're not used to doing it. They don't have the experience of doing it. So,
quick update on the Little League. Nevada had a 2-run homer. They're up 3-0 in the top of the second.
Wow.
They were hitting 490. They were hitting 490 at the College World Series. I think the number was 490 coming into tonight's game. So, you know, I expected, as good as Davis is, I didn't expect that she was going to be able to shut them down. But I just hope it's a relatively close game till the end, because I think it's great for baseball, and it's great for the Little League to have that kind of notoriety all around the country. She's been on the morning shows, Good Morning America. She's been on everything. I think it's great for baseball.
Absolutely.
You know, you're talking about the five-inning pitchers. Unfortunately, I think the managers have, maybe you'll disagree with this, but I think the managers have almost taken it for granted that a representative performance is if you get into the sixth inning. Well, to me, what the heck kind of performance is that? You're starting your pitcher and saying if you get to the sixth inning, then we're going to start bringing relief pitchers in. I mean, what kind of an effort is that?
Well,
yeah.
you see it happening every night.
Yeah,
you know, five and a third, five and two thirds, and
yep.
Quality, they tell you it's a quality start. I don't know about that. When you got
to
go to your bullpen,
you want the game to go faster, and the other night, Joe Girardi used 7 relief pitchers the other night. Well, by the time you go out to the mound, you bring in another guy, and you bring in another guy, and another guy, and then the other team brings in another guy, and another guy, and when it's all finished, the score's 2-2. Holy, what the Sam Hill, and they make a blow up in the papers and say, oh, we got to speed the game up. We can't do this. This game took 3 hours and 15 minutes. No reason for it to play take 3 hours and 15 minutes.
So, when you have to use your bullpen in the sixth inning almost every night, your bullpen is not going to be effective. I guarantee you that. Not going to be effective.
I agree 100%.
Just saying, Richie, I like the old days of baseball. There's no pitch count on the pitchers. I mean, everything was well played right now. Right now, with this replay going on, the pitch count on the pitchers, that's why we're not going to see like a Nolan Ryan or Steve Carlton coming up in a long time right now.
No. I heard a doctor. I on my trip, I had a Sirius radio, and I had my wife's a nurse, so she had the doctors. They had a doctor's show on, and this doctor came on and made a comment about pitching the kids, and he said the reason there's so many injuries in major leagues today is because when these guys were kids, they didn't throw enough innings, they didn't pitch enough, their muscles are not developed, and that's why
right.
there's so many injuries in the big leagues.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what he was saying.
Roger, Tommy, and Frank, we were spoiled, you know, growing up.
Yeah.
Because,
oh, God,
you know,
yeah.
when you looked at Steve Carlton, you talked about 300 innings a year.
Oh, right.
Not 200, 300. These guys don't pitch 200. Oh, we get to 180 innings, we got to start slowing them down. Steve Carlton pitched 300 innings a year.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Don? Giorgio Gorman's on with us, and he'll confirm that, because look at the high school great players he's seen up there in the Mercer County area over the years. What do you think, George?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, I like great pitching games, and, you know, now you're right. I mean, they were talking tonight about the Yankees. It was the fourth inning, they're down to one position player, Francisco Cervelli. They got 13 players on the roster who are pitchers only.
Yeah, right.
So they're saying,
exactly,
you know,
right.
they're running out of players in the fourth inning. They got 13 guys on a roster that are pitching.
That's half, better than half the team, of the 25.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I mean, you go to the Yankees and you look at them right now. They did a little thing last night on TV. Maybe you saw it, George. I don't know. But, I mean, you got Drew that's not hitting 200. You got Ryan who's hitting 185. Now, these guys are playing. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, incredible. You watch them come up to the plate, you say to yourself, you know, even Headley, who I think has done a terrific job coming in and taking over third base defensively, but even he's only hitting 235, and you think he was Brooks Robinson.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
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 Hey, Don,
sure.
The Phillies had Cameron Ruff. He's back at AAA. He wasn't even hitting much over 100, and he's
wow.
still not hitting much over 100 at AAA.
Beltran's hitting, as of last night, was hitting 234. Brian McCann was hitting 233. And these guys are getting how many millions of dollars a year?
Oh.
Unbelievable.
Zillions
yeah.
and zillions of dollars, Don. I mean, these guys in the old days were lucky they hit like 200, be sent down to Reading or sent down to the minor leagues. I remember you know, like back when Richie Al was playing, 30 home runs and 100 RBIs, super superstar. I mean, I think the baseball fans expect so much of these players getting paid zillions and zillions of dollars. It's getting pressure on the players to produce, and I think Richie and everybody, that's why Evan Longoria's not producing, signed a big 10-year contract, and I think he's pressing too much.
Well, he's definitely pressing, and he doesn't have anybody hitting behind him, and he's chasing so many bad pitches.
Oh,
that, you know, but at the same time, you got a catcher that's hitting 190. I think he's got 8 RBIs for the whole year.
Right.
You know, that's no help. I mean, you're pinch hitting for a catcher almost every game.
In Jose Molina's defense, I like him a lot for these young pitchers. They can learn from him. You know, I mean, Jose had a great at bat last night. Richie had ten foul balls. He had a great at bat, but I think Jose was a great learning tool. We didn't figure that Ryan Haneke would be down for the whole year. We didn't figure that. But Kirk Casale, I seen him play the Stone Crabs a year ago. I think he's our catcher of the future right now.
Well, nobody's covered more games over the last, 30 years than you have, and whether it be football or whether it be baseball. And, I mean, you're a better representative to talk about how the game has changed and what's going on right now as compared to, I mean, not even 10 years ago. I'm not, but the last 2 or 3 years, the defense has been terrible. They don't understand the rules of the game, half these guys. And, it's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah. Hey, on a sad note, I'm watching the Red Sox and the Angels, and Garrett Richards had an injury to his right knee, I think, or his left knee. But they had to take him out in a stretcher.
Oh no!
That's not good. That's going to be a big loss for the Angels.
That's too bad. Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, every team has had so many serious injuries this year. I mean, you look at the key players for Detroit, the key players for Tampa. I mean, it's amazing how 4 and 5 of the really hallmark players that are supposed to take you to a playoff are all on the DL.
Great point, Don. Great point. You know, Richie, do you think that the players like are tweaking too many muscles that when they pitch and they move their body the wrong way? Because Cabrera, it looked like he tweaked something around in third base to score the only run in this game so far. I don't know what to think about that.
Well, he's been hurt. He's been nicked all year. He really hasn't been 100% healthy all year. And he's still producing, not at the rate that he has the last couple of years. So, you know, with him and Victor Martinez in the lineup, you got two great hitters that are gonna shit score you a lot of runs. And I kinda think that game last night was a big turnaround for the Tigers. The fact that
they, I agree 100%. I think you're right.
They were in a bad slump. They're going.
Yep.
And they came back. They came back and won that game last night. And I told myself, I said, this is a good turning point for these guys. They're starting to hit the ball and they're starting to, be comfortable. And at the plate, it looks more comfortable at the plate, and of course they got the pitching. So,
But Richie, anytime you get four runs of Max Scherzer, the four innings, you should be able to win that game. And unfortunately, Grant Belfour is not the same. Kevin Kiermaier, gotta give him credit, Richie, and everybody. He made a great play. Fortunately, the ball got by him up there, and the Tigers eventually won the game, but. What about Kansas City Royals? James Shields and that team is on a roll right now.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They've been playing very well. No question.
Yeah,
let me throw this question out to everybody.
Okay.
You know, back when Koufax and Gibson were dominating and they lowered the mound because they wanted more offense in the game, do you have any idea of what they could do now to put more offense into the game? Because, they made those changes because of the dominance of the pitchers at that time. And took away from the offensive continuity and the crowds in the stands. So now what do you do? You got any ideas?
No, you can't lower the mound anymore.
You'll have more arm troubles.
Exactly. I think that's part of the reason there's a lot of injuries, and the inconsistency of the height of the mounds from high school to college to minor league baseball to the big leagues. It's very inconsistent. People don't realize that. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but during when the playoffs begin, all the mounds have to be remeasured again. Not only on the regular mound, but the mounds in the bullpens. And you won't believe how many times we found inconsistency in the height and the distance of the mounds that had to be changed. We made the teams change them before the playoffs started.
That's the first time I ever heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
I know you're going to remember when I tell you this. If you look at Roger Clemens' record in Baltimore, was very, very – he couldn't pitch in Baltimore. They said Earl Weaver used to go and tell the groundskeeper to mess the mound up in the bullpen. Not necessarily the one on the field, because that would mess his pitcher up, but the one in the bullpen. And Roger was always very uncomfortable in Baltimore because he always said that there was a big difference between the mound in the bullpen and the mound in the regular stadium.
That's right. So, Rich, you remember the groundskeeper in Cleveland, the old Cleveland Stadium days, Bossa was his last name. He always made that mound in the third baseline for ball players. If it goes fair or foul, always made it go fair. And the same thing he did to the mound. He messed up the mound for those players up there.
Oh, Bossa used to have that. He used to have that chalk line out there in the corner of left field.
Right.
The dead ball area. you couldn't catch a ball out there. You know, I just tell you a quick story about Bossa. I was in Cleveland one day, and there was a day game against the Rangers, and he got out on the field. He came over to me and he said, "Listen, we're gonna get a rainstorm here, and when it comes, you got to give me time to put that tarp on, because if you don't give me time to put that tarp on, the wind's just gonna blow it out, and we're not gonna be able to put the tarp on the field." So I said, "Okay, no problem." I said, "I'll give you time." Well, the top of the fourth inning, the Rangers got two guys on, and Jim Sundberg hits a pop up to left field, and the wind had just started blowing, and you could hear it, with the wind blowing right through the holes in the stadium, you could hear it. So it was coming. Well, anyway, that pop-up ended up being a three-run homer. So, the wind just took the ball out. Well, I called time, and I put the tarp on. I told Bossa to bring the tarp on, and it wasn't raining. It wasn't raining at all. Doug Rader was the manager for the Rangers. He came running out. He says, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" I said, "I'm putting the tarp on. It's gonna rain." I said, "Can't you see?" He said, "Well, it better rain, because otherwise you're going to really see a redhead get mad." And I said, "I've seen redheads get mad before." but you know what? It didn't rain for about it didn't rain for about 3 minutes, and that was the longest 3 minutes of my life. I thought, Bossa, you better be right. Well, of course.
They didn't act that quickly at Yankee Stadium on that. They knew the rain was going to come. Did you see what it did to that field there? Well, they couldn't play the game. They finally had to call the game. The Rangers, I give the Rangers a lot of credit. They just said, "Look, we're not going to play under these conditions. That's it."
Mm-hmm.
The Yankees won the game. Maybe they wouldn't have won. But just as you say, the reason for it was they didn't put the tarp on, and by the time the rain came, they couldn't get the tarp on.
But right. You saw what happened last night, and I just heard over the TV that the Giants appealed that loss last night because they called the game and they won the appeal. They're going to make them finish the game tomorrow. First time in 38 years that an appeal on a was upheld. Yep.
How about that? Wow. Maybe you guys talked about this before I got on, but if you did, just tell me and we'll dump it out the window. But Larry Poe is present from the Mariners. You know, did you into that tonight, earlier tonight?
I mentioned it, Don. I thought that it was a great gesture.
Oh, terrific.
Unfortunately, you know, more players don't do something like that, but it showed Robinson Cano with that Rolex watch left there for Larry in appreciation for what he did in developing his career. I thought it was a great gesture.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, I thought it was terrific. I really did. I thought it was a great gesture. You know, Larry worked so hard when he was a coach for the Yankees under Joe Torre and really schooled him at second base. And obviously he had all the talent in the world, but he also made him better and better every day. And for him to recognize and send a Rolex watch into Philadelphia to his locker, I thought that was very special.
It was. It's a shame more players don't do something like that, just a token of their appreciation.
Exactly.
Well, I agree 100% that way, because more players should take care of their players up there and that. And Richie, I still remember the old Cleveland Stadium up there. To pound that pitching mound. I remember late Herb scored. Here comes that ride agent on for the mound up there for those Cleveland games in early April or late October up there. I still remember that. Herb would say, here comes that ride agent on. The old stadium,
is Joe West never going to retire?
The technology right now is fantastic.
I don't think so. I think they're going to have to rip that uniform off of him. They're going to put him in a casket with the uniform on.
Oh, my God. The Cowboys, I don't want to lose. He was out there. He's the crew chief. He's out behind second base last night. And he's been around that for 100 years.
Rich, did you ever umpire with Cowboy Joe West?
I was his instructor at umpire school. When he went to umpire school, actually, Joe West was the best student we ever had.
Was he really?
Yes, he was. Come through the umpire school. But I've never, you know, he's a National League guy. I was an American League guy.
Right.
So we never umpired, you know, never umpired in big leagues together. So.
I always want to ask you this question, Richie. What was your favorite ballpark to umpire in? And the umpire said, what was your least favorite ballpark to come to?
Well, you know, we always think that way, but I remember when I was in the big leagues maybe 2 years, 3 years, and Nestor Shylock was my crew chief, and we were bashing the stadium. I'm not going to mention what the stadium was. We were saying this, we were saying that, and he got up from his chair. He said, I don't ever want to hear you say anything bad about a stadium or a city. He said, because you're doing the same job, and if you come to that city with that attitude, that's the way you're going to umpire. And it made a lot of sense. And ever since that, when people ask me what was my favorite stadium or my least favorite stadium, that's what I tell them. So... to be honest with you, for years that I umpired, the best two places to umpire was right here at the Trop and in Toronto because the lights at home plate, I could see the ball.
Actually, let me ask you this two questions, actually. First question would be, Jerry, umpire with our good friend Al Clark. Everybody that's on the show knows Al. I'm from Trenton, And I saw his dad. His dad was the sports editor of the paper in Trenton, and he went on to be an umpire. We were out in California when the bridges started to fall down with the earthquake and all. But so I ask you about Al, but also they talk about the catchers and Brian McCann got hit the head again last night. He's been out for 7 days, 8 days because of a concussion. How about the umpires? Because they talked a great deal last night about the change in the mask on the umpires, and maybe they got to go or change in the mask for the catchers. Maybe they got to go back to the heavier mask and something like that. So those two questions. What do you think?
Yeah, that's part of the problem. Part of the problem was the mask. they have these real light masks today that are very easy to wear and very comfortable, but they don't take any of the jarring, as well as the old heavy masks, and I think that's why we didn't have as many injuries as far as getting hit. And also the other thing is that with this evaluation system that they have for the umpires are working higher. They're working higher behind the catcher. And if you have your head between the shoulders of the catcher, that you're going to get hit because that's where the target is. And unfortunately, we've had some injuries to umpires. We've had some guys that have had to retire because of it. And you know, fortunately for me, I don't remember ever having a concussion. I asked the doctor one time, how come these umpires today are getting concussions, and we were getting hit, and we didn't have any concussions, and he said, you did have concussions, you just didn't even know it.
Oh.
Yeah, he said if you got hit in the mask hard, and if you got hit in the mask a couple times, you had a concussion, but you just didn't know it. So what's happening today is the awareness of it, you know, it's there. And everybody's aware of it, so they check on you a little quicker, a little sooner, and now they make you sit out for six or seven games.
And how about Al Clark?
Well, yeah, I haven't heard from Al in a few years. I know that he's doing good. I understand he just wrote a book. I don't know what the name of it is, but he wrote a book.
I didn't know that.
George, do you ever have any conversation or communication with Al?
I have not talked to him. And last time I saw him at Marty Springstead's funeral.
Oh,
okay. Is George still on?
Last time I saw him, we were sitting in the back room at Rossi's was Al Clark, Joe DiMaggio, myself, Eddie Liberatore, and I forget who the fifth one was, but... And then, of course, his dad went to Arizona. I don't know whether Al went. He lived over in Bucks County, but I don't know whether he moved out to Arizona where his dad was, or whether he still lives in in our area.
No,
I
he's
think,
in
Marty,
I think,
Marty's
I think.
Still in Ewing, isn't he, Don?
I understand he lives in Virginia.
In Virginia.
Yeah,
yeah, Marty Clark, Al's brother, was quite a basketball official and baseball umpire in Mercer County. I was wondering if George O'Gorman was still with us, but I guess he jumped off.
Maybe George is off because he would have remembered some of the times we were at Rossi's, because every time Liberatore would bring Joe D in, we always had lunch at Rossi's in the old restaurant in the Berg, not where it is today.
Right.
It's just funny, right? Because it was all these umpires today. Rich, remember the American League? You also had to wear the vest outside your suit jacket. How uncomfortable was that?
No, it really wasn't. It's more comfortable with the outside protector, but you don't see the ball as well. You don't see you're working too high and you're working too far away from the catcher, and you just can't see. I used the outside protector for 2 years.
Because I thought that you always would get in the way, meant for the seeing those balls and strikes and also the close plays.
Yeah, well, you learn how to use it. You learn how to get it out of the way. That's part of learning how to operate with that balloon there.
Richie, wasn't that the idea that they always had from day one, I guess, that the American League umpires were more of a high ball umpire and the National League umpires were more of a low ball umpire? Was because of the chest protector. That's what they always said.
That's correct. That was correct.
Hmm.
That's because the height of the head. The umpires
right.
in the American League, because of the outside protector, had a higher strike zone, but they wouldn't call the low pitch. So the National League guys were working in what we call the slot between the hitter and the catcher, and they would get down lower, and they would call the low pitch. They wouldn't call anything above their eyes. Anything above their eyes, they'd call it a ball.
Mm.
And that was the reason that it was known that, but and it was true. The only problem was that in 1977, when they let everybody use the inside protector, they kept saying the same thing. that doesn't happen anymore. Because then all the umpires in American and National League were using the inside protector, and they were
right.
And they were having to work in the slot between the catcher and the hitter. So,
Wow, that's interesting. I always want to ask you that question, Rich.
Update from Williamsport. Nevada is up 3-0, but Monet has six strikeouts in three innings, and the kid from just took a ball from the left outfield, and brought it right in and caught the runner. So,
wow. How about that?
Well, Rich,
what's
now?
The most controversial plays you were involved in? With Earl Weaver, with Alvin Dark was always one to keep people help. What was the most controversial call that you can remember off the top of your head?
Most controversial?
Oh, here we go.
It's easy. Are you kidding? In 1996, when Jeter hit that ball to right center field in New York.
Right.
You can't get any more
controversial. You were the right field umpire then, were you?
I sure was.
Oh.
Oh. I did not remember that. I remember the play. I just didn't remember you were the umpire.
Uh-oh.
Well, there's a lot of people that still remember. And all the Oriole fans still remember. And anytime the Yankees play the Orioles, they have a controversial play. They usually show that one.
I wish
I was getting royalties for that. I mean, I'd make a lot of money.
Ouch on that one there. But I don't mind
that. That doesn't bother me a bit. That's the way the game was.
Umpires, I guess, Rich, you have to be like relief pitchers, right? When you walk off
that's
the
right.
mound, win or lose, you look at the next day, you can't go back. You turn the page, you forget about it.
That's right. That's correct.
Exactly. That's like a golf shot. Hit a bad shot one hole, you just got to come back and birdie the next couple holes. That's
right.
I don't know about that, but it's interesting. I also want to ask you, Richie, that question about the chest protector and that. I learned something a lot tonight about the chest protector and what was your not favorite city. I want to learn that,
I'll tell you, Tommy, that mask has become a major, major story now because, as Richie said, they went to the lighter mask, and, of course, they went to the hockey mask, too, right? For quite a bit of time, and I don't know what kind of a mask that actually is. That a good protection or is that a bad protection, Richie?
Well, they say that the hockey mask is a little bit better than the regular mask, but it's a little bit uncomfortable, and a lot of the guys don't like it, and you have a tough time wearing a hat with that kind of mask, and so you have that kind of problem. So I don't know. I think we got maybe six or seven guys that wear that the hockey mask.
Wow.
Other than that, the other guys wear the regular mask.
Richie, the comments from our host tonight are not reflective of our station or the other participants or anyone over the age of two with an IQ of 4.
Hey, Frank, you're right, and I'll tell you what, when you go back to when I was growing up, both leagues wore those outside protectors, and I can remember many a great picture of the late Jocko Conlon. What a great umpire,
yeah.
And he had that outside chest protector.
Right?
Yep. Yep, and he was smaller than I was.
He was one of the great umpires of all time, Jocko.
Yes,
and Leo DeRocher, he was Leo DeRocher's favorite umpire.
he was the greatest.
He was good. Very good. Very good.
Next question I'll ask you, Richie, what was your favorite manager that you used to can't, you know, not hate, but just that, you know, oh, no, I'm in this, I got to go against so-and-so manager.
Well, the worst guy, actually, the worst guy was Dick Williams. Ooh. All the guys. Dick Williams was, he used to get very personal, and he, you know, he just had that attitude, which, you know, but I will say this: he was very consistent because he treated everybody that way.
How about Gene Mock, Rich?
Gene Mock was fine when he came to the American League. he was fine. He was, you know what? I'll give him credit. As long as you went out there and worked hard, and you were busting your butt every day, and he saw that, he kind of leave you alone. He was a little stickler on the rules and nitpick on little things, but he really wasn't a bad guy. I ended up liking Gene Mock. I ended up liking him. I did.
How about the worst batter? You had to be Mike Cardgrove, the human brain delay.
Oh, man, he took forever. Wow.
He would get up
forever.
Bat to bat.
He'd fit in good with these guys today. Perfect today.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what? He wouldn't even be noticed today if he did all that today. All these guys do that.
In Cleveland home game, you hear the drummer in the background going bang bang bang. When he did that, and he used to try to score some runs up there. Oh God, those are the days at Cleveland Stadium up there. I used to park in West 3rd Street, walking down Richie. Everybody, it's a funny story. I'm walking out one day with Tom Candiotti, right? He said, "Are you a ball player?" No. So Candy said, knowing his comedy, "Just sign a ball." So I signed the ball, and I had a date. You know, I was on this one date, and here comes Jerry Brown, the governor, and Tom Candiotti. He says, "Tommy, can we sit with you?" Oh, here we go. I lost my date for the night, and she ended up dating Jerry Brown, and probably married to Jerry Brown to this day. So. My question,
Tommy,
you're
in a lot of trouble right now, Tommy, because, you know, you got the drummer out there and Cleveland's still beating on that drum, and you got Cleveland still being called the Indians, and I don't know whether the Indian tribes, they appreciate that. We may have to take away the Indians to call them the Penguins or something.
Call me Cleveland.
Hey guys, I'm gonna have to cut off. I've got my wife's coming in here with the grandkids. So,
God bless your grandkids, Richie. God bless you.
Thanks a lot, Rich. Always great. We love you.
So, thank you so very much. Always great to talk to you. You got great stories and
a lot of
facts behind the knowledge.
Anytime. Call me anytime.
Thank you, Richie. Oh, God bless you. All right. Oh, it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Guys, it doesn't get better than this. Wow. Baseball talk right now. Rays still trailing 1-0 right now. They have a golden opportunity to bottom their 62-1 to count to James Loney right now. So I'll say about 14,000 at Tropicana Field tonight. So hopefully they can get this turned around. But the marquee matchup tomorrow, guys, Alex Cobb versus David Price, 1:10 first pitch, and they go on the road. And Red Sox come in for Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, Monday afternoon for Labor Day weekend, guys. I can't believe it's Labor Day already in 2 weeks. So that's the last big homestand for the Rays coming. They play Toronto right after that and Baltimore after that. So then they go to Toronto and Baltimore after tomorrow afternoon. So it's senior prom down here today. I think Patty's ready for senior prom day.
Well, Tommy, I don't know whether you fellas talked about it before I got on the air in the first hour, but, you know, it was just great to see when the Yankees came in last weekend. I don't know whether every one of the games were sold out. I mean, they kept saying 32,000 plus,
right.
32,000 plus. But it was great to see the turnout, even though, I guess there was a little controversy about the fact that there were so many Yankee fans there, whether they were, you know, cheering more for the Yankees than they were for the Rays. I guess that didn't go over too well.
Well, Don, I was at all three of the games, and it was great to see Derek Jeter. Saturday's game was completely sold out, 25 for Friday night, 23 for Sunday afternoon. But you got to give them credit because they spend a ticket in New York. They could come down here, stay a weekend on the beach, and go all through Yankee games for less than probably $100 than they pay in New York up there. But they, you got to give them credit for coming down, supporting. Like they, you know, they have the, they're in the ballpark. You buy the beer, so they're having a good time up there. But they show the Yankee attire. Our fans were probably at the beach somewhere. Don, I can't believe this.
Well, it just looks so much better watching on TV. I don't know whether Roger had a chance to see it or you look at so many games at the Trop, unfortunately, and every time they take a picture of the mound or every time they take a picture, you know, shoot a camera shot from left to right, you see all empty seats, and you know, that's all people talk about. So it's great to see three games in a row where they have a lot of people.
Hey, Don, you know, talked about empty seats. I understand that Dave Montgomery has to spend some time up at 49th and Market because he's going to give a vote of confidence to Ruben Amaro.
Yeah, I'm with you, Frank. It's awful.
Yeah, I heard that. But I'll tell you, look where they stand in the National League as far as attendance is concerned. You're talking about a team that sold out night after night after night. What are they at, 13th spot right now? Something like that.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, Don, if you look at their minor league system, it's a disaster. The records, I mean, there's nothing that's encouraging there.
Guys, I have the tennis figures to fed off you right now. 1.9 million fans right now, close to 30,000 for 64 home dates right now. Their raise is 1.1 million, 18,000 for average per home day right now. So, you know, there's a difference up there in that, but it's just tough down there. The stadium issue was the other day for this current on stadium site. Guys, this is right off the bridge in Tampa and safety right by Frank. You know, you get off the Howard Franco's that land up there. But what's that going to do the people coming from Tampa? I still say the best place, we said it before, I'm not going to get into it tonight, you build this race stadium either downtown Tampa or by the Florida State Fairgrounds. That's
where
the money is.
Where are they going to get the money, Tommy? Where are they going to get the money?
I know, but I'm just in my pipe dream. But I was just thinking maybe Seminole Casino.
That's like you going to work, Tommy. It's a pipe dream.
Yeah, that's right. But Don, that's a great question up there, because the state's not going to give anything what the Marlins did for their stadium right there. I mean, that's a great question. I was just thinking,
yeah, Tommy, that Marlins Stadium, I'm still paying for it with my taxes.
That's right.
Should not have because that is a Huizinga's property, and I don't care how you take a look at it. He's got it. There's right angles on every part of that building, and that was all
right.
His design. But we paid for it. I'm not for
right.
paying for another stadium.
Right.
I know the Sugar House is been sold to Mr. Vinnick, and that whole area down there could be developed into a sports complex, but that's going to be a very tight way to do it because City of Tampa.
Yeah, but Frank, you're a lot closer to it than any of us are. And you know, how many more years does this league still have to go with the Trop? And then, as you say, even if they can buy out the lease, where are they going to get the money between the city, the county, and the state to build a new stadium? Whether they build it in Tampa or whether they have a better selection than that, I don't see any place where there's any money.
There is a
great point.
That's where tax money is down. The new starts in home building in Sarasota County since June is down 14% and 22% in Manatee County.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Hillsborough County. So that means that you have not getting any money from the impact fees. You're not getting any money from ad valorem, and you can't keep putting more and more debt on the current debt holders.
Well, we've talked about it now for three years, and everybody in the newspapers and radio and television has talked about it down there.
Right.
But I just don't see how much longer, Tommy, does the lease have to go on the Trop?
Okay. Tommy there?
Yes,
yeah,
hey, gentlemen, Frank says tick-tock.
No, Tommy, Don had a question.
Okay.
How much longer does the lease go on the track?
I think it's 2023, I believe. Isn't that right, Frank?
2026.
26, okay.
Wow. 12 years.
Oh, man.
It's got to go on that. So it's, gentlemen, always a pleasure. Don, thank you so much, and enjoy your summer up there in the Jersey Shore. I'm going to get up to Philadelphia, I think probably end of September with the hookup. If you're still up there, you go see a Phillies game up there, and I'll let you know about that, so it'll be great.
Great.
All right, partner. Good luck to it. Hope it goes well. Frank, nice job there directing the traffic.
Yes.
And had some great guests on tonight. A lot of fun.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Don, for coming
Absolutely.
On. Roger, Atlanta.
Great job, as always, behind the controls. The master.
Roger, always thanks for coming on. God bless you. Fantastic.
You too, Tommy. God bless everybody. Take care. Have a great week.
Thank
you. The girls.
Frank, just what a show. I thank Richie Garcia, the coaches we had up there, the writers we had out there, most of all our sponsor, Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. We want to purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com. And the Abbey Course, give Tom a call, 352-588-2060. I'd like to thank Rookies Bar, Frank. I was up there the other day. Stopped by to see them. It's right in Spring Hill. And I'd like to thank Tina from Spring Hospital up there, up in Brooksville is up there today. The Springhouse Hospital up there, Springbrook Hospital is up there for a great affair. We had a blast up there. So, and Frank, God bless everybody. God bless your lovely wife and lovely kids. And have a great week. Thanks for a great job, sir.
Okay, Tommy. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please just say thank you. It means the world of good to everybody. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Officer Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Florida Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and sunshine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
My heart is so much. fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the field. Spirit and with mind aflame, saw ash and strength and length of days.
Good night, Bob. We miss you. We love you.